are so expensive. So if you want to see an America like that, you're on the right track.
Savage.
But the sky is blue and the sun is golden and the hills are glorious and the sun sets through the fog can tear your heart out. You know, when you see the fog lifting off this bay, or you see the fog rolling in over the Sausalito Hills, you forget Obama, you forget the whole deal. I mean, nature is it. Nature's eternal, which is why I'm always drawn to nature and animals. That's why I'm drawn to the little bit of coastal cruising that I do, or the bay cruising, predominantly bay cruising, although that's going to soon change with a new Savage vessel coming into my life in the near future. But as I say to you, I'm reading a book, The Cruising Guide to Central and Southern California, one of the finest cruising books ever written by Brian Fagan. You know, it's amazing to me what you can find in the world of books. Golden Gate to Ensenada, Mexico, including the offshore islands. And every cove is covered by this man, and pictures that he took in his sailings over the years, which he started 35 years ago. No one's ever written a better book. Astounding. And you don't even have to be a boater to read this book as a piece of history of California coast. So as I say to you, you can learn from anything. Whatever your interests are, if you find the right teachers or the right writers or the right storytellers, you can learn from anything. And in this sense, as I say to you, I'm reading about the early history of the coast of California and reading this cruising guide because I hope to come up from Ensenada in early September up to maybe Santa Barbara with a new boat that's coming in through the Panama Canal. I'll tell you that story another time, and I'll keep it very generic. But I'll join the crew in Ensenada, or I'll join the crew after it clears customs in San Diego, and I'll come north up to a certain point. So I'm reading about Santa Catalina Island. If some of you have been to Catalina Island, it's pretty magical. Santa Catalina Island, 18.5 miles long, 7 miles across, is a submerged mountain chain whose peaks hover offshore above the haze on a summer's day. Catalina's isolation goes back millions of years, creating a unique environment. 12 inches of rainfall a year. Amazing. And then you read on. Catalina's remoteness, even at the height of the Ice Age, 20,000 years ago, when sea levels were as much as 300 feet lower than today, Al Gore, meant that relatively few plant and animal species made it across the channel. Some tiny seeds arrived on air currents. Others liked it, holly-like toyon in birds' beaks. The Pacific created such an effective barrier that only about 400 native plant species have become established on the island, many of them in local plant communities. During the past 10,000 years, humans have introduced the wild oats that dominate the island's grasslands and many other plants. Beautiful writing, isn't it? But, as I say, when you read about the early days off the coast of California and you see how Santa Barbara was struggling to survive, and the early pioneers into Santa Barbara had to survive by selling hides, lumber, and other natural products. You realize how far we have fallen as a nation of free men. You realize that we have a government that is a world unto itself, a government that produces nothing, a government that creates nothing, a government that provides no services whatsoever, and a government that simply picks your pocket and rewards those who put the government in power and enable it to aggrandize even more power. And this is very dangerous because when the people start to wake up, they start to rebel. And there is a rebellion brewing in America. There's a rebellion brewing against this imposter, Obama. And it's brewing on many different levels. And what is going to happen when push comes to shove is very clear. This man, this Obama, is putting in place the private police force that he slipped when he said he would create should he become president. Do you remember that soundbite? I'm almost afraid to play it. Because every time I play it, I can't sleep for weeks. And I don't want to play it again unless you have it handy. We'll play it again.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
A civilian national security force that is armed, that's as big as the U.S. military, answering only to Obama, which is the SS or the SA. If you don't see the handwriting on the wall, you're crazy, you're blind, you're on drugs. You're on drugs. Now, I want you to add to this the fact that he took a street thug from Oakland, California, who had harassed the police for years, and he put him in the White House. We don't know what the man is doing in the White House. We don't know what budget he was given to create this team of brown shirts. Does anyone know? Now, what about the fact that Obama has hired the head of La Raza, Cecilia Munoz, and put her in the White House, given her an office, put her in the West Wing, and given her a budget? La Raza is in the White House. Anti-police activists are in the White House. They're in place, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? Revolutions don't happen overnight. They happen by degree. They're happening by degree every day. And it's happening at a much faster pace than even Chavez dared establish when he so destroyed Venezuela. Now he's eliminating radio stations that are of any consequence in Venezuela. He's eliminating them. He's saying that they're disturbing the peace. You can't understand that it's going on here as well. You don't understand why I was targeted by Obama, Obama's friends in England. You think that that happened out of the blue, that they picked Michael Savage? You think that they just chose my name out of a hat to balance the list? You're mistaken. Yes, there's a degree of that. They wanted to make it look like it wasn't just about Muslim racists who were trying to take over England. And they're very dangerous, those who are in the fringe of the Muslim religion over there. They know that. They're frightened of them, and they're trying to control them. So in order to balance the list, they pick me. But why me? Why not the golfer? Why not the wall banger? Why not? Why not? Why not? Well, why Michael Savage? Because I am a threat to the New World Order. I am a man who stands out from the pack. I am a man who is educated amongst a group of uneducated men in the media. It doesn't mean they're stupid. It doesn't mean that they're ignorant. It doesn't mean that they're not loquacious and brilliant. Some of them are. But they don't have my education. They don't have my historical knowledge. They don't have the ability to teach the people where we are and where we might go. In other words, those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. I am the only host who knows history and teaches history in the mix. And I am telling you that we have been here before. Obama is not new. Obama is a continuation of something very old. And that's why when I say to you, even reading a book on the cruising guide of Central and Southern California, and you look back and you see that the little town of Santa Barbara was trying to grow, and it had no money. And all they had to sell were whales and lumber, things like that. And the town almost went broke. But they had something to sell. They had to sell something. They had to get hides from animals, or they had to fell trees to sell lumber. Hides, tallow, lumber, hardware, passengers. You hear this? Coastal trade gained momentum as numerous sailing vessels and later steamers plied between the various settlements carrying hides, tallow, lumber, hardware, and passengers. Santa Barbara gradually became a winter resort for wealthy Easterners. Can you believe this? Back in the 1850s, it was a winter resort for wealthy Easterners. Imagine they traveled across the country to go to a winter resort in Santa Barbara. I didn't know that. I thought they all went to Miami. Stearns Wharf was built out from the beach in 1872 and provided a convenient staging post for the coastal steamers. Even Chinese junks traded in the channel, hunting sea mammals and collecting abalone shells for the far-off markets. Then, of course, the gold rush occurs. And the gold rush sets off the drama of California and America. After the gold rush of 1849, the opening of the Transcontinental Railroad. And it explodes. But the point is that the people had to sell something in order to make a living. Hides, tallow, lumber, hardware, and passengers. They had to move passengers. They had to do something. What does your government do for you? Tell me what the Department of Education does for you. Tell me what product Miss Sebelius produces for the American people. Miss Sebelius, the Department of Education head, goes out on the roadshow with Arlen Spectator, the turncoat phony, and they try to sell an audience in Austin, Texas, on Obama's socialized medicine. The audience breaks out screaming at them. And Sebelius gets up and a man says to her, how could you pass a bill when you haven't even read the 1,000 pages. Now, remember, this is in liberal Austin, Texas, at a town hall meeting. And Sebelius says, well, wait, I was never a member of Congress, so it doesn't apply to me. And they say, boo, boo, boo. They don't buy it from her. There's a rebellion brewing in America. Even liberals are standing up. They understand they've been sold a bill of goods. Hope and change was a lie. We're going to get out of Iraq. We're going to end war. And now the war in Afghanistan is building up. What for? Why are we in Afghanistan? Tell me why we are in Afghanistan. I want an answer to that question. I want to know why men are dying in Afghanistan. For who? Who are we dying for? Why are our men dying in Afghanistan? And why are we in Afghanistan? Can anyone answer that question, all you good liberals who put Mr. Hope and Change in power? You were told you'd have hope and change, that there'd be no war? Where are all of you anti-war activists now? Where are your lousy bumper stickers, no war for oil? Where are you now, you phony liars? You drug addicts, you? You can't even look at yourselves in the mirror, you old hippie bums, you? Because you're all lost. You're lost in space because you've been spaced out for 35 years. And you were the useful idiots who put this joker in power. That's what I'd like to say to you if I had a radio show that was listened to. But since this show does not exist, since this show is non-existent, I did not say any of that, and I'll be right back.
And my arms, a girl with all the charms of you.
So, here we are. Specks in a sea of history. And you think Obama's an original. You think he's new. You think he hasn't been seen before. He's been seen several times before in history. And so have we. A nation of slaves. In this case, a nation of drug addicts. Manipulated by a very small group of mandarins. It's happened before. And it's happening again. And so that's why, in order for me to rest my mind, the few times I can rest it at all, it's nature. It's the fog coming in, the fog going out. You watch the fog blowing in through the... You watch the fog coming into the Golden Gate, under the Golden Gate, at the end of the day. It reminds you of God. I mean, you know, if you're not a religious person, you can become a religious person. You watch the fog rolling over the hills of Sausalito down onto the water, or vice versa. You watch the fog lifting and the sun breaking through, and the sun breaks through. It's only people who live out here who understand, well, people who have an idea how beautiful nature can be. And then you read, you know, and we're playing Frankie Avalon for that reason, because I was talking about Catalina Island. Many people have heard of it. And it's amazing when you look at it, and you read about it, and you realize that it's part of a geological change. Catalina Island began as a part of the seabed, but a series of complicated plate movements created the island at least 20 million years ago. A chain of volcanic islands rose from the seabed off the California coast between 24 million and 5.3 million years ago. Complex earth movement shifted the island some 150 miles northward from near the Mexican border to its present position. Now listen to this. A spectacular ancient shoreline, complete with sunken river valleys, lies 80 feet below the Pacific, a mile west of the island. It's amazing to me when you realize that it is just a blink of the eye what we're living through here. The complicated lives that we lead, where we think we're building a future, and that there's always going to be a tomorrow like the tomorrow that your father had or the tomorrow that you thought was waiting for you, can be wiped out in the blink of an eye. Never mind from man, but from nature itself. It's all a miracle. That's why if you read the Jewish prayer book, one of the earliest prayers, people don't understand this, one of the first prayers in the Jewish prayer book, which is the first of the five major, the first of the monotheistic religions to have a prayer book. In it, there is a statement that says, thank you, God, for many things. And one of the things it says is, our body is filled with many orifices and many cavities. And if even one of these should close, even for a moment, we would not exist. And the religious pray to God for that, because they recognize every morning the miracle of waking up. Now think about the miracle of that in terms of conceptualizing that every breath you take is a miracle. I mean, I don't know if you could exist in that world. It's hard to believe that anyone could walk around that in every breath they take, they realize that God gave them that breath. And what to do with that breath is the issue. What are you doing with it? It's too complicated to go into. I'm not here to give you any Norman Vincent Peale job here. But it is a miracle when you think about it. I mean, I don't know if you understand how miraculous life is. Now we come to America. the greatest experiment in the history of man, a land where freedom was supposed to be granted to every man. But the freedom was not free, and the freedom was not to be given to you by a government. It was a freedom that was given to you by God, and a freedom you were supposed to maintain, or else it would be taken away from you by despotic individuals around you who were no different than the British, but in some cases, maybe worse than the Brits who once ruled this land as a colony. And now we have a government that may as well be a government of a foreign country, a government that is as foreign to the people, perhaps even more foreign to the people, than were the British in the early days of the colonies of the United States of America. A government so remote, a government so distant, a government so non-responsive to the citizens, whether it be a local town bureaucrat who won't pave a street, but robs you blind through your local taxes to give to his brother-in-law who owns the paving company, or a state run by governors who give contracts and jobs as patronage, or the federal government now, the 51st Ward of Chicago, according to those who know these things, who recognize the faces that they saw in Chicago's back wards. They now say that this country has become the 51st Ward of the Daily Machine. I wouldn't know if that's true because I'm not from Chicago. But those who write such things write so with a certain degree of authenticity, and who am I to doubt it? And so here we are. With the blink of an eye, we can lose it all. The blink of an eye, we can lose our freedom. The blink of an eye, we can lose our nation. Or has it already happened, but we don't even know it? Well, millions of people are starting to ask themselves that question. 58% of GOP not sure or doubt Obama born in U.S. Well, that's amazing. But you say, well, that's only the Republicans. Now you have the laughable issue. You have radical leftists in the media saying that, well, oh, the Republican Party is threatened to be destroyed by the extremists in the party who believe this kind of thing. Will the Republican Party get rid of the extremists? Now, look who's telling the Republican Party what to become. The communists are telling the Republicans, who are already extreme liberals, don't be misled by the conservative base. They're the nuts. The conservative base are the crazy people. When, in fact, the communists have taken over every avenue of the media, with very rare exception. I use the term very, very specifically, because if it talks like a communist, if it walks like a communist, if it believes in state power, if it believes only in state power, if it doesn't believe in freedom, if it doesn't believe in individual liberty, then it's a communist. It doesn't have to have Babi Yar graves. It doesn't have to have open pits where people are shot and killed. It doesn't have to have slave labor camps to be a communist government. Don't you understand there are varieties of communism, varieties of socialism, 30 varieties, 50 varieties. Bush was a socialist, fiscal socialist. Bush built a bigger government than four presidents before him. I tried to tell you that for years. You didn't listen to me. Many of you in the Bush base got mad at me. You stopped listening to me. You were the true believers of Bush because he walked around with the Bible. And he had Laura, the librarian, the great librarian, be on his side, giving us the Stepford Wife routine. Laura, the librarian, the doyen of what is literary in the country. Laura Bush. One meeting after another about books, but never did she once mention a conservative book. No, it was Laura Bush and George Bush who pulled the wool over your eyes first. And they, of course, greased the skids for what we have today. And they used the old man, the old shoe salesman, the old shoe salesman, Tom McCann, to usher in what we have today. And whether or not we survive as a nation of free people is what I mean. Of course we'll survive as a nation, is really questionable right now. Very questionable how much longer we will have freedom to begin with. Freedom of speech. My freedom of speech was curtailed by Obama's friends in the socialist labor government of Gordon Brown. Whose speech will be curtailed next? Is it yours? Couldn't be you. You're not in talk radio. Or could it be you? Will it be the internet tomorrow that criticizes Obama when the polls are not favorable? I don't know. We don't know what the Joker might do tomorrow. We have no idea what the Joker and his Wall Street gang are liable to do next. We do know this. There's always going to be a tomorrow and a tomorrow and a tomorrow. And with God's will and your listenership, I will be here for you.
Savage.
We'll be right back.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are some of the things that I tried to avoid talking about on the Savage Nation today. One was the sneering media. Today I saw the sneering face of the media in all of its ugly creepiness. There's a creep on MSNBC who interviewed Dr. Orly Tates. And Dr. Tates has legitimate questions about the background of Barack Hussein Obama and where he was born. The sneering creep on MSNBC attacked her viciously from start to finish. But it was the sneer. It was a sneer on his face. He knew better. It was a case study in how the media looks down their nose at anyone who challenges their biases. I was one of the first in the media to have Philip Berg on when he raised the same kind of questions about Obama. So even though the empty suits and empty skirts on MSNBC refused to give her a fair hearing, I had her on my show today and gave her a friendly forum. She got more listeners here than she ever would have on MSNBC anyway. I want you to listen because I'm going to play some excerpts from this interview. I want you to see just how the media operates, how they bring down the iron curtain on anyone that stands in the way of their agenda. Wait till you hear the way this woman was treated by this sneering, creepy David somebody on MSNBC.
85% of American citizens are saying Obama was not vetted. He needs to be vetted. He needs to provide original birth certificates. The only one that are on the fringe are Obama's brown shirts in the media that insult people and
name
would not let them speak
Obama's
out.
Obama's brown shirts. You're referring to. You're making a reference early to Nazi Germany and to a lot of us who lost relatives in the Holocaust.
Exactly.
That is deeply,
exactly.
Deeply
your
offensive.
Behavior and behavior. Okay, your behavior is offensive. You and Tamron Hall are behaving in an offensive manner. You're calling people
Orly.
Names, and you would not listen. You just called me names. You said this is a crazy movement.
Oh,
the
no.
only ones that are crazy, that are listening to
the
Obama's
best part
lies.
Is when she brings up the Holocaust, and he says to her, well, for those of us who've lost relatives in the Holocaust, and she reminds him, yeah, like me. And suddenly his calling card was trumped, but he kept sneering and turn redder in the face.
All I hear from mainstream media are dumb insults. That's what
Ann
you're
Coulter
providing.
Ann Coulter is not
dumb
mainstream.
Insults.
She hates
okay,
the mainstream.
You Let me answer. If you don't let people speak up the truth, the truth will come
You've
out.
You've got 3 seconds, and we're going to have to respectfully
out,
end
but,
this.
But, and people like
okay,
you,
go ahead.
Because, Obama's birth certificate does not show the name of the hospital.
Ann
does
Coulter
not show
says
the name of the
right.
doctor.
Carl
and
Rowe
who
says
cares
this is
about
a forgery. Answer
She's
that,
not an
or we're
attorney.
Done.
I'm telling you, listen. You will be done. You will
Ann
not
Coulter
be on
says
TV
you're
for
crank.
Too long. I don't care about Ann Coulter. What is important is that Obama
okay.
has numerous social security numbers, and one of them is a social security
Orly, maybe
number.
Maybe we can
of
get to your motivation
person.
With.
The madness of the media. What do you have to do to make an impact in the media today? What kind of person do you have to be? Well, let's start by looking at the people that the midstream media focuses on now. Michael Jackass, an accused pedophile, a self-mutilator, and a drug addict. He got a month of coverage when he died from a drug overdose. He got a televised memorial service. Talking heads speculating about the cause of his death 24/7. Then we had Octomom, 8 kids, far more than she knew she could afford to support, went on welfare and is now being given a TV show. Then there's Henry Louis Gates Jr. All he had to do was shout racism, and he got weeks of fawning attention from the left-wingers in the media. These are the kinds of creepy figures who get attention today. Now, I'm not complaining, but what about Michael Savage, a man who only has 10 million people a week who listen to him? A man who was banned by a major Western nation and put on a list with murderers and terrorists for speaking his mind? a man who has had his freedom of speech and freedom of movement stolen from him, a man who has just been profiled by the most respected magazine on arts and culture in the country, what kind of media attention did I get? Nothing. Zero. In another time, New Yorker profiles would have meant instant national recognition, invitations to the White House. Now it gets swept away by the president's most recent town hall meeting. But in-depth profiles, such as the one done on Michael Savage by The New Yorker, are still very important, even if they don't make Fixed News or ACDC 360. They are still read by people who matter. They are still read by the thoughtful people in positions of power. I may not have come across to the masses last week, but I got inside the minds of the controlling masses. I get inside the minds of those who control the power structure, and they understand now that there's more to conservatives than Neanderthalism. Believe me, they can't dismiss my ideas as a flash in the pan anymore. I'm not someone who gets on the air and has himself hypnotized, or starts eating Chinese food with chopsticks, or talks with celebrity sluts, and acts more like a hemorrhoid with ears than a commentator. Now look, I'm not faking it for ratings. I'm the real thing. I cover the whole range of human activities, not just politics. I criticize all political parties equally, not just the demon cats. I'm a man who gets angry and doesn't just speak to you in even tones. I cover what the rest of the media tries to cover up. I don't just cover the front page. I cover the waterfront. It's all starting to come apart for the Obama administration. Today we found out that 58% of Americans don't even believe he's a citizen. And now his minions are being shouted down by angry crowds as they hold healthcare town hall meetings around the country. Listen to the traitor senator, the turncoat, all in Spectator, as he's roundly booed, heckled in Philadelphia, as he tries to tell the people we must rush the healthcare reform bill through.
The third session, which doesn't cover 47 million people.
What a liar. No wonder they're booing him. But wait, it gets worse. A member of the crowd asks the question why congressmen can't read the bill, and Kathleen Sebelius, another Obama hack, gives a prevaricating answer that's amazing. She has the nerve to say, I was never a member of Congress. You got to listen to this two-faced phony.
When congressmen scoff at the notion of reading legislation because they aren't qualified or they aren't competent to understand it, how can we be confident that those congressmen are competent to re-engineer the entire health care system?
I am not a member of Congress, have never been a woman. That's just a fact. I'm just telling you, if my observation is I have never seen members of Congress work harder on it. It is unacceptable to me for somebody to hours have been spent. If people say they haven't read the legislation, then tell them to go back and read it.
We do.
Yeah, go back and read 1,000 pages. Now, here's where Spector gets right to the point. He says there just isn't time to read the fine print on a bill that will cost $5 trillion.
When you have a bill, and we have a lot of them, and there are 1,000 pages, it should take my tax staff, and we divide up the bill. We have to make judgments very fast. We give it out.
Well, thank God Americans are speaking up and shouting out, this is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. Start from the bottom and work your way to the top. new strain of HIV derived from gorillas. Gorillas? Yes, a new HIV strain is believed to be the first detected instance of HIV being transmitted from gorillas to humans. Now, we don't know how the woman in Africa picked up this strain. She claims she never ate so-called bushmeat. Okay, then let's not go there. Housing prices, luxury Manhattan penthouse slashed by $20 million. It's still beyond belief, the price, but it's still $20 million off. Wow, what a deal. Here's a crazy one. A bank teller chased a bank robber and was fired for doing so. Here's a guy I ought to hire. This guy is a hero. Instead, the bank fired him for running after the bank teller and catching him. Why does Obama support the illegal socialist Zelaya in Honduras? That's what Jay Ambrose of the Washington Times wants to know. Hey, why does Obama support the illegal socialist Zelaya? And why does Obama support the same ousted dictator who was supported by Fidel Castro and the dictator of Venezuela, Chavez? Well, can you put two and two together, ladies and gentlemen, and come up with M-A-R-X-I-S-T?
Eddie, my love, I love you so.
Savage Nation Rock and Roll. I can't wait to Friday. It's getting longer each week, Friday. Almost the summertime. If I was normal, I'd be planning a vacation. If I was a normal person. What do? You go away for 2 weeks, go fishing? What do? What do normal people do? Disneyland? Are your kids are young, all right. I went to Disneyland once. I needed to take Valium the whole time. I did. I couldn't tell you. I almost lost my mind. It's like I went to Masada, I had to take a Valium. A bus ride from Jerusalem took forever. Here is where the soldiers held off the Romans. Then what? Then they were all slaughtered. Great. How exciting. I can envision the soldiers throwing themselves off the cliff. That made sense. They just should have given up and had to, you know, open a pizzeria. Would have been a better choice. 2 years the siege went on. Then eventually they came up and killed and threw them off the swords. Great. What am I standing here for over the Sea of Galilee? But Disneyland was about the same experience. Horrible, mind-numbing. My mind feels like when I get around places like that, these amusement parks, when the kids were younger, it was like so hard for me to deal with that. People think that when you have children, you have to like act extra normal. That's what drives children into drugs. When you try to conform to some hallmark card of what you should do with your children, that's when a child reaches for drugs. I mean, try to lead the life that you want to lead with kids, you know, and let them tag along. Don't do what's good for them necessarily because they're going to hate it as much as you do. Do you ever see children on vacations with their parents? They're bored out of their minds. I'm talking about after they're like infants. What does an infant know? And a young child, whatever you do is fine. There's nothing more depressing than seeing a couple, let's say, like the hardest age to take kids on a vacation is like, let's say, the girl is 12 already and she's just at that point where, okay, and then the boy is maybe 14, and he's already been on the internet too long, in the locked bay, and so you take them on vacation. It's like taking along an adult couple who you detest, and you're paying the bill, and they don't want to talk to you over dinner. They don't want to be with you. You ever see them like in the hotels around the world, like in Hawaii, the 12 and 14-year-old kid and the couple? Hey, we're having a good time. You would like another macadamia nut sundae? Dad, please, you know, the girl's already looking at the bus boy and the boy's looking at the bus girl and they don't want to be there. They wish their parents gone without. So having a couple with you and they don't talk to you and you're paying the bill. The whole flight home, everyone's like, ugh, depressed on the plane. That's two week vacation. I had to take a painting when the kids were young. It got so bad. I was on such the precipice of the hotel balcony. I went and got a watercolor set. I still have those pictures somewhere. I bet you they bring a lot of money today for auction them off. Some of them were quite good. One was a picture of a car. I remember that to this day. I did a watercolor of an automobile without wheels, with four, like two adults and two children going nowhere, with a little island in the middle of it. That's quite an interesting picture when you think about it. Because you always like rent the car. Oh, now what? Let's go on the H1 freeway and see the traffic. Then let's go to a Porky Boy diner and see the hostile locals. It's unbelievable. I love they usually drive Dodge Chargers and eat double cheeseburgers and hate the Howley. I knew it was time to get out of there. Everything they took was from the Howley, and everything they hated was from the Howley. Forget about it. That's why I came here to wonderful San Francisco, the land of freedom. Yeah, huh? You hear the chains rattling as they beat each other with them. So I got calls. I don't know. None of them appealed to me. Nobody. No one heard a word I said yet today. Let's see. I'm going to read like a rich in New York life in the 40s versus today. I can't deal with that. I don't think anyone wants to hear about his Uncle Murray wearing a brown suit. You know, okay, so kill that one. Maryland, happiness versus middle of the road. I don't know. Savage advice of perfect food from Canada. What do I know, perfect food? I eat spaghetti 10 times a week. Is that a perfect food? I'm still living. You can give me spaghetti 3 times a day and I'll eat it. It's white bread that's no good for me. Gluten, now everyone's with the gluten. Every few years, there's another discovery as to why people were overweight and tired. And it works for a while until eventually you realize that as you get older, you get overweight and tired. They all want a miracle cure. They all discover it. Oh, yes, your problem is that you have a leaky gut and you have a celiac. Whoa. Okay, that's sure if you cut down on wheat and you're going to lose a little weight if you stop eating bread. There's no question about it. We knew about that 50 years ago. Look at the beekeepers of Somalia. I mean, they're in pretty good shape. They live on, like, pollen, you know, and whatever else. They can. Of course they're thin because they're starving to death. My mother had a different theory about men. Stuff them, and stuff them again. That's how they placated the men in those days. Ethnic mothers all did that. They understood men were basically dangerous animals that could yell. In those days, some of them could hit. My father didn't, but some did. Violent, loud, they smelled. So the best way to control them was feeding them, like a zoo. Oh, whenever the guy got up, here, eat something. Whenever he was hungry or not, they made delicious food, and the guy ate it. And by that time, he was so, like, sluggish from the food, he was sated, and he slowed down. And there was less danger of a blow-up in the house if the guy was stuffed. Then they died at 40, 45 of a heart attack. If they were lucky, they went to 57, whatever. And the women lived another 25 years on the money that was left over in the house. It was a deal. They worked it out. She suffered the whole life from this bum and then lived on a little bit money at the end, and that was the whole story. They had a whole workout. Today, it's not like that anymore. Today, with the Viagra and God knows what else, the guy thinks, oh, yeah, he wants a 20-year-old wife at 72. What do I know people are going to get?
Savage.
I linked to a story on MichaelSavage.com from the New York Post entitled Condemned by Their Own Laptops by John O'Sullivan. He joins us now to talk about this. John O'Sullivan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Great article, because it's about me. But what made you write this article all of a sudden?
Well, when I saw the story, and particularly when I saw the emails from the officials in the Home Office, in which they gave their real reasons for keeping Michael Savage out of the country, I was reminded very strongly of a very well-known and worldwide popular British BBC television sitcom called Yes, Prime Minister. Yes, Prime Minister is a kind of British comic version of The West Wing, and it describes how the way that government is really run. In other words, you have the civil servants who mastermind everything, and the poor old politicians are jerked about and made to look foolish and so on. So you have this clever, manipulative, cunning, Machiavellian civil servant called Sir Humphrey, and you have a decent but hapless Prime Minister called Jim Hacker. And Jim loses about 9 of every 10 battles he has with Sir Humphrey. Prime Minister is manipulated again and again. And Sir Humphrey is a kind of clever, crafty fellow. And the way that those emails were written reminded me of Sir Humphrey. Namely, we've got to keep Michael Savage out of the country. Why is that? Is he a dangerous terrorist? No. The reason is that he's not a dangerous terrorist, because we need to have some people who aren't dangerous terrorists on the list in order to make it plain that we're not biased against dangerous terrorists. We've got too many of them on the banned list already. So this was such a kind of delicious absurdity that I thought, well, I'll write a piece about this, pointing out that it's very similar to the comedy of The West Wing, but it has some very serious side to it, too.
I think Sir Humphrey would never have put that in an email, though.
Well, that's exactly right. In fact, one of the things I said was that if there had been a real Sir Humphrey, one of the old school of mandarins, he would have known not to put on things on paper. There's a famous remark by the Scotch whiskey magnate, Jimmy McMillan. Do write and fear no man. Don't write and fear no woman. Well, now it's not women you have to be afraid of. It's the front page of the New York Times, or in this case, the Daily Mail, a conservative paper, which has got a good record of getting its hands on confidential documents from within Labour governments and publishing them to the world, to the great embarrassment of the government.
This does not reflect well on Britain's naming and shaming practice.
Well, the idea behind this naming and shaming is very curious. Obviously, every now and then, a government declares that it doesn't want some people into the country, but technically they become persona non grata. And I think every government has a right to keep out people who might be a danger to the people, keep out foreigners who might be dangerous in one way or another. But in this case, they were looking around for people who weren't trying to come into the country. I gather you weren't trying to come into Britain. Secondly, they put on the list people who couldn't possibly come into the country, including two Russian skinheads who murdered people and who were serving long jail sentences in Russia, so that even if they wanted to enter Britain, and there's no evidence they do, that they wouldn't be allowed out of prison by the Russians to do so. So why put these people on a list? Why publicize the list? Why embarrass some people by putting their names alongside others as dangerous characters? And the answer to that question is that the government actually wanted to have people on the list who weren't terrorists and who weren't radical extreme Islamists. Because they had a group of these on the list, and they thought if they published the list of people who really were dangerous, and many of these, the majority, or almost all of them, turned out to be radical extremist Muslims, it would look as though they were anti-Islam. So they looked around for people who might be plausibly attacked. They put them all together on a list, they then published the whole list, saying, look, we're not biased against Islamist terrorists. We are keeping out other people who are dangerous. But unfortunately for them, they put Michael Savage's name on the list. So the purpose of this was very Machiavellian. It was an attempt to say, look, the world is full of dangerous people, and we've just made a random selection. So there's nothing here that says that suggests that we are biased against any one group or another. However justified that intention may be, the idea of putting perfectly innocent people on a list with a lot of villains and then saying we're keeping them all out is obviously unjust to the innocent people. And, of course, in this case, it produced a law. It's producing a case for slander. And I would think that if the Home Secretary, the official responsible for this, continues and fights that case, it's Jackie Smith, a woman, she was the last Home Secretary, she will be humiliated in court, because fundamentally these leaked emails suggest bad faith on the part of the British government, as simple as that.
Do you think that this is a characteristic of the British government?
It's not characteristic of British governments, it seems to me, over the years or anything like that, where the standards of honesty and behavior are, by standards of governments, not bad, pretty good. But there's recently been a huge scandal in Britain of a very similar kind. Damien McBride, a Downing Street aide to Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister, was discovered sending scurrilous emails in which he was trying to spread rumors about the sex lives and of leading opposition politicians, leading conservatives, and their families, suggesting that the wife of one prominent conservative had a shameful disease and that kind of thing. Now, immediately this happened, he was disowned. Well, you would expect that. And the Prime Minister said he was shocked and horrified that this had been going on. Again, you'd expect that. But when you add these two cases together, you do get the impression that there is a culture of deceit and slander really at the very heart of the British government at the moment. I don't think it's a permanent thing, and I don't think it particularly comes from civil servants. I think it comes from these temporary civil servants brought in, the political loyalists around Labour ministers who are brought in. And I do think the standards of political morality in the generation of new Labour political operatives who came in 12 years ago and who are still in government, I do think those moral standards are low. And they've begun to infect the civil service as well, the apolitical civil service. And I do think, you know, I think anyone who looks at what's been happening in Britain in recent years has to be worried that the once high standard of political morality, and I don't necessarily know that you'll agree with this, the once high standard of political morality has really declined seriously. And I think that should worry people in Britain and outside.
John O'Sullivan, thank you very much for your article.
Michael, thanks very much indeed. I very much enjoy being on your show.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
In his weekly report on the shenanigans of the left coast, here is James Herson.
Thanks, Michael. Sacha Baron Cohen has had to hire additional security guards. This is the guy who portrays these films like Borat and Bruno that make fun of a variety of people, and now he's the recipient of a not-so-veiled threat. You see, Cohen's character Bruno in this last film gleefully mocked gays, Southerners, Christians, Jews, and you name it, but is seen in the film ridiculed the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, the Palestinian terrorist group, and they respond, shall we say, differently. In the movie, Bruno, who's an overtly gay fashion journalist from Austria, disses the terrorist group when he tries to get himself kidnapped. During a meeting with Ayman Abu Aida, who is identified in the film as the leader of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, the Bruno character says he wants to be famous. Therefore, he wants the best guys in the business to kidnap him. The group condemned the use of the sham interview, and they called it a dirty use of their brother, Ayman. The Martyrs Brigades issued a statement to a Jerusalem-based journalist, quote, "We reserve the right to respond in the way we find suitable against this man." I mean, that language, "the way we find suitable," is the reason Cohen is feeling like the new Salman Rushdie and is bolstering security for himself and his family. The group called the Bruno film part of a conspiracy. They said it was a conspiracy against the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades. Meanwhile, Ayman Abu Aida, the guy who was in the film, wants to sue Cohen because he says he's not even a member of Al-Aqsa, but is a member of the Regional Committee of Fatah. Now, you can bet Cohen will continue to deride Americans, Christians, and Jews. But will he be joking about terrorist organizations in his future films? Well, a guy who does a lot of joking, the actor Kelsey Grammer, best known for playing Dr. Fraser Crane, has revealed that he's been communicating with the dead.
What?
One of the people from the other side of life that Grammer has been conversing with is his sister, who was the victim of a tragic murder.
Oh, my God.
Kelsey's kid sister, Karen, was raped and stabbed to death 34 years ago by a juvenile gang. She was only 18 at the time. The actor also channels several other members of his family during his numerous seances and speaks with a guy named Alex, who Kelsey says was born 15 years before Christ.
Are you kidding?
Grammer said the murder of his sister triggered a self-destructive period in his life of substance abuse and failed relationships. And he's had a lot of other rough patches as well that include turbulent marriages, various addictions. He's even gone public with the admission that he was physically abused by at least one of his wives. Grammer believes his family is cursed. For months, Kelsey had been in great distress. He was anticipating that his sister's killer would be up for parole and that he would have to give testimony and actually see this vermin in person. He knew that he would have to convince the parole board, you know how they are these days, to block the release from prison of the leader of the gang who murdered his kid sister. People around him tried to convince him not to go to this parole hearing in Colorado because he would come face to face with his sister's murderer for the first time. Thankfully for Kelsey, bad weather stalled his connecting flight. So Grammer's words were read to the parole board. Here's what they said. "This is a butcher. This is a monster." That's what Kelsey wrote. "Please consider when you wrestle with the fate of this man, the degree of suffering he has inflicted on his victims, but also the families of the victims. Karen was my best friend. I was her big brother. I was supposed to protect her. It very nearly destroyed me." This plea by Kelsey Grammer led to the board refusing the convicted murderer's application for parole. And now, Kelsey won't have to worry about it until 2014. And because of your diligence, Michael, America doesn't have to worry about getting their daily dose of talk. Thanks again for being the media's sole holistic conservative. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation. All right, play Blue Monday.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
Both sides of the coin are the same when you think about it. A religious man, for example, wakes up in midlife. He looks around at the landscape of his life. What's happened to him? What's happened to his wife or his children, his relatives? And he starts to wonder. All of the self-denial, all of the pleasures that he denied, all of the prayer, all of the worship to God, and look what's happened to me, he thinks. Look what happened to my son, or look what happened to my daughter, or look what happened to my mother, or look how my father died. Does all of my prayer have any meaning? Why hasn't God heard my prayers? Have I been rewarded in this life for my devotion to the Lord, he thinks? The irreligious man, the atheist, awakens in midlife. He looks around at the landscape of his life. He sees what has happened to himself, his wife, his daughter, his sons, his sisters, his brothers, his mother, his father. He sees a landscape of humanity and their suffering. And he begins to wonder, did God punish me for not worshiping him? Have I been punished for leading a dissolute life? Should I become more religious? Should I abandon any of my ways? At a certain point, the good and the bad are the same. At a certain point, both sides of the coin make the coin. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Take a guy like Red Skelton. You may remember him, you may not. Played a clown, did a good job. I loved him as a kid, didn't know much about him. As it turned out, the man painted. He painted schlocky paintings of clowns. What did he paint, 1,000 clown pictures? What was he trying to do? I thought about it the other day as a grown man. What do you think he was doing? He was trying to paint the clowns out of his own head. You see what I'm saying? In other words, there was a higher part of Red Skelton. In order for him to perform at all, there had to be a brilliant high element within him, something spiritually higher, right? To be a performer like that. Because he didn't use dirty words. He didn't do anything with filthy, dirty language in order to get a laugh out of an audience. He actually used comedy to attract people, unlike the dirtbags on Showtime and HBO today. Every other word is F or MF or F and MF, 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 F, 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 MF. What'd you say? MF, MF, MF. What'd you say? MF. What'd you say? That's HBO's idea of comedy. Every other word, and that's not comedy. It's insanity. But Red Skelton didn't have to do that, so there was a higher element with him. But the clown he had to use inside himself to hit those notes. But he was depressed that he had to be a clown to get the audience to listen. He probably would rather have been the higher element within himself. Does this make sense to you? See, painted clowns all his life, I think, to rid his mind of the clowns. You'd call them, what do they call them today? Everything they have a psychological word for, and they give you a drug to turn you into a Democrat. What would you call it today? Not the ghost. In my day, they called it the shadow. Huh? No. Not psychological terms. So they say inner demons. Now, everything's an inner demon. In other words, everything that's a human being, oh, he's got an inner demon, take a pill, come back in 3 months, take another one. We'll see if that doesn't put down the psychosis. We'll give you another one. It'll create the psychosis. What inner demon? It's inner selves. I recognized at age 18 through self-analysis for 5 straight years that if you peel away the onion and keep peeling away the onion of your own self, at the middle of it, you're going to find nothing. At the center of it all, there's nothing. So why peel anymore? So you pack the onion back up and you march forward and that's it. What are you looking for inside? There's nothing there. Hello? Keep knocking. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Do you have that song for me right now? Keep, because I know I'm going to get slammed now already with it. No, my God is within. Keep looking within and you'll find God within the center of yourself. All right. Yeah, I know. Jimmy Carter thought he met him in his living room because of the strychnine. I mean, that family drank enough strychnine for the guy to become the peacenik he is. You talk about the average person has nothing on the inside. The Jimmy Carter family with the strychnine and the snakes and seeing his lord and master in the living room. I don't know what he was wearing. I don't know, trousers, tweeds,
went away and left me
a tuxedo.
Time ago.
Who's this?
Now you
keep a knocking, but you can't.
Knocking. I hear you knocking. Go back where you've been.
She's a stripper. She worked for LBJ in the back.
I begged you
Gail Storm was a stripper
go,
for LBJ, wasn't she? I don't know who she
goodbye.
Was. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.